Chapter 8. Wedding Preparations. When Thomas dropped Peter outside his house late Monday morning, his mother met him at the front door. "Peter, you're a hero," she beamed exultantly, extending her arms to give him a hug. The neighbours who were out washing their car dropped their rags and came running over to congratulate him as well. For one dumbfounded moment, Peter wondered what was going on, until his dad strode out of the house with a newspaper. "Look at this, Pete," he exclaimed. "Your picture made the front page. I'm so proud of you, son. That was some kind of courage." Without a word, Peter took the newspaper in his hands and looked at the picture carefully. His image looked rather dazed against the dark night sky and the bright flames. "We saw you on TV, Peter," Mrs. Darley yelled from across the road. "Yes, we saw you too," his mother confirmed, "and we've been getting calls all weekend about you. It's too bad you weren't here to take them for yourself." "You should see the gift you've been sent," his father exclaimed. "I don't know how you'll ever get it back to Australia." Peter's mind went back to the fire and his feelings of suffocation and fear. What if I didn't bump into her leg? What if she died? What if I hadn't prayed? Does anyone realize how close I came to leaving the church without her? I don't deserve to be treated like a hero. "Weren't you scared to run back into that church?" Mrs. Darley asked, joining the others on the lawn. Peter looked over at her soberly. "I was terrified," he admitted truthfully. "I certainly didn't volunteer. It's just that everyone was expecting me to do it, and there wasn't time to argue." "It still took an awful lot of courage for you to stay in there until you found the girl." Peter shook his head. "Let's just say I was lucky to find her when I did. I could hardly breathe. I was struggling to get out when I happened to bump into her leg." This acknowledgement seemed to subdue the excitement of the neighbours. Mrs. Darley looked disappointed, but Peter felt better. He didn't want to hide anything. After a few more questions, some hearty pats on the back, and even one request for his autograph, most of the crowd dispersed. Peter picked up his camping gear and followed his parents into the house. There was a huge present sitting on the dining room table. Peter's dad told him that the little girl's family had brought it over on Sunday. "They were very disappointed you weren't here," he relayed. "They wanted to thank you personally, but they were leaving for a 2-week vacation." Quietly, Peter took off the wrappings and discovered there was a beautiful stained glass lamp underneath. "Wow," he said, "it's gorgeous." And it was. "They didn't have to do this." "They wanted to," his mum said. "You saved their daughter's life." Peter tried to explain to his parents how he felt and the awkwardness of the situation, but while they appreciated his sentiments, they didn't agree. Finally, with a smile, his mother changed the subject. "Peter," she informed him meagerly, "the family that I was telling you about is meeting us for dinner at the Purple Horizon Thursday night." "Oh, you mean the family with the beautiful daughter?" Peter clarified with a wry grin. "Yes, and they can't wait to meet you, especially now." With a smile, Peter gave his mum a quick hug. Her excitement kindled a flicker of hope. Would he finally meet the girl of his dreams? The Purple Horizon was a lovely restaurant just outside of Granville, overlooking the Niagara Escarpment. Peter had only been there once in his life, many years ago, but he'd never forgotten the experience. It was a small country restaurant that emphasized atmosphere as much as great-tasting food. Such a pleasant prospect was truly something to look forward to. However, Peter brought himself back to reality. Thursday was still a few days away, and lots had to be done before then. Right after lunch, he drove down to the city. First, he went to the mall for tuxedo fittings, and then he stopped at a stationery store to find a wedding card and some wrapping paper for the lantern and air mattress. On his way out of the mall, Peter saw a beautiful painting of a stormy sea with a lighthouse beckoning in the distance. It reminded him of the Nova Scotian coastline, where Thomas and Purity planned to live. Even though it was very expensive, Peter wanted to give his friend something really special. The weekend camping trip had strengthened his bond with Thomas, and he was sorry he would soon be leaving him again. So Peter bought the painting, hoping that he had enough wrapping paper to cover all three gifts. Before leaving the city, Peter made two more stops to pick up several orders of bulk food. With the heavy rush hour traffic, it was after 7 when he got back to his parents' home. The next couple of days he worked long hours at the Hendersons, getting their lawn and garden in perfect condition. Everyone raved about the fabulous results. Then there was the trellis to construct, the marquee and stereo system to set up, and tables and chairs to organise. Sometimes Peter worked alone, as Thomas and Purity had many other things to do, but whenever Thomas had time, he joined him. When Peter returned to his parents' home after eating dinner with the Hendersons, he always spent a couple of hours talking to his mum and dad before retiring to his room, and every night he read until he fell asleep. Since he didn't think he would have time to read the entire Left Behind series, Peter had skipped to the 8th book, The Mark. It was interesting, frightening, and rather gory, when people who refused to take the Mark of the Beast tattoo lost their heads under the guillotine. When he finished The Mark late Wednesday night, Peter actually took his old Bible off the shelf and quickly skimmed through Revelation. It wasn't by any means a careful study, but he was impressed that the novels he had been reading seemed to fit perfectly with the biblical text. Yet, Thomas's little chart from the Epistle of John had cast serious doubt on the matter. Is there some way to reconcile the two? He mused. Or is that impossible? Oh well, he shrugged. Whether or not it's based on truth, I'm enjoying the story. So Craig Simons is going to perform the ceremony? Peter clarified Thursday afternoon as he and Thomas finished off the trellis. Have you had much to do with him over the years? Thomas reached for another nail. Lots, Pete. He's been my mentor, my friend. In fact, he's been just like a father to me. I've been out to see the Simons many times since they moved out east. Peter contemplated this for a moment. And Purity is good friends with little Jessica? He asked, trying not to sound skeptical. Jessica Simons was to be the maid of honour, but Peter couldn't picture her any other way than how he'd last seen her. At 8 years old, she'd been the cutest little girl, with pale blonde hair and solemn blue eyes. During the times he and Verity had spent with the Simons learning about the Bible, Peter had loved to tease Jessica. He and Verity had playfully vied for her attention, each trying to claim her as their own little sister. Now that he was older, Peter wondered if Jessica had truly understood that they were only teasing her. He had never forgotten the sad day at Verity's funeral when the little girl had slipped her hand into his. "I'll be your sister now," she'd generously offered, completely melting his heart. "Little Jessica?" Thomas laughed in response to Peter's question. "Man, are you ever in for a surprise? Pete, she's probably as tall as you are. It's too bad she never learned to play basketball." "Really?" As Peter held the next cross piece for Thomas to nail into place, he tried hard to imagine. But all he could picture was a small child's face, atop an elongated form. "She's a very good friend of Purity's," Thomas went on to say as he carefully hammered in two nails and reached for another piece of wood. "Purity stayed with the Simons for a couple of years." The two of them had a good system going, and the trellis was almost done. Peter positioned the last strip of wood, lining it up with the pencil marks on the posts. "Jessica's a lovely girl," Thomas added as an afterthought, "but she's very serious. Serious about God, that is." When the trellis was completed, Thomas brought out a quart of white paint, and they both set to work trying to finish the project off quickly. Peter had to leave early that afternoon to go to dinner with the Arantos, and tomorrow was the rehearsal. Time was running out. "Have you read any more of your mum's books?" Thomas asked, reaching up high to brush paint on the arch. "I hope to start Desecration tonight," Peter replied with a smile. "It's the 9th book, but I've skipped quite a few. Maybe next week, when it's just my parents and me, I'll have time to finish the whole series." Thomas looked at him soberly. "You know, Pete," he teased kindly, "after all this time we're spending together, I'm not sure I can say goodbye for another 10 years. Peter was touched by his friend's remark, but he scoffed, "Ah, you're getting married, mate. You're not going to notice whether I'm around or not." There was no reply from Thomas, just a sigh as he dipped his brush back in the paint. "You know, I'd love to stay if I could," Peter expressed, bending over to reach the lower portion of the front post, "but I can't." "Truly? You'd love to stay?" Peter laughed. "Sure I'd love to, but I can't, Thomas. Feelings don't matter." Thomas didn't look convinced, but he changed the subject. "I was clearing out the stuff in my desk last night," he began, "and I came across a complete set of all the study sheets on Antichrist. If you think you might get bored next week, I could leave you the ones on 1 John." Peter nodded slowly. Boredom was a real possibility. He was looking forward to having some time with his parents, but his dad worked all day, and he didn't think his mum had much planned. If there was anything that Peter hated, it was boredom. Too much time to think always drove him crazy. "That'd be great, Thomas," he replied hesitantly. Then with a sly grin he added, "I'll send you the answers while you're on your honeymoon. You'll be checking your emails, won't you?" Thomas Flexen painted him, and Peter laughed. Actually, Thomas considered thoughtfully a few minutes later, if you're flying out to Nova Scotia in a week to visit your brothers, Purity and I could probably arrange to meet you there before you head back to Australia. Peter objected to anything being cut short on account of him, but Thomas assured him it would work out better in the long run. It will only be a few days earlier than we planned, his friend explained. And this way you and I can go over the study sheets together. You might have a lot of questions after you look into it some more. The new idea meant they didn't have to say goodbye at the wedding, and that was something Peter wanted to postpone as long as possible. They might never see each other again. Once they were done painting the trellis, Peter gave Thomas his brother's addresses and phone numbers so that they could make an easy connection in Stirling. Then, stretching out the garden hose in a few gentle curves around the trellis, he and Thomas started stripping the sod for a new garden. I still haven't come across those passages from 1 John, Peter stated, referring back to his mum's books. But I must say that everything from Revelation seems to make total sense. I looked it up, and the novels simply follow the verses from the Bible, so they must be reasonably accurate. In Revelation it says that people will have to receive a mark on their foreheads, and there will be an image of Antichrist that can speak, and that's exactly what happens in the mark. Ah, but wait a minute, Thomas remarked, heaving a shovelful of sod into the wheelbarrow. Revelation is a symbolical book, not a literal story. It's a vision. He paused thoughtfully. If you want to understand what the symbols mean, you first have to understand how they're used in the rest of the Bible, especially the Old Testament. For a moment Thomas stopped digging as he tried to think of an example. Like the beasts, for instance, he suggested. It's easy to understand what the beasts symbolize in Daniel's prophecy because so many clues are given, and then you can apply that knowledge to the beasts in Revelation. Peter shrugged. I don't know a whole lot about Revelation, he admitted. But why would God make his word difficult to understand by giving it in symbols? That doesn't seem fair. Do you know why Jesus spoke in parables? Thomas asked. Peter didn't have any idea, but he was willing to guess. So people could remember the lessons better? Would you like to know the reason Jesus gives? It must be important if you're asking, Peter replied with a laugh. Sure. It took Thomas a few minutes to run into the Henderson's house and find a Bible. When he came out, Peter had finished removing the last few pieces of sod. Read this, Thomas encouraged, showing him Matthew 13, verses 10 to 13. Looking over the passage silently, Peter read a very different reason than the one he had given. All right, he murmured at last. So Jesus' disciples asked him this same question, why he spoke in parables, and Jesus said, because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has, will be taken away from him. Therefore I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. That doesn't seem fair at all, Peter argued, picking up his shovel to loosen the soil in the new flower bed. Well, think of Jesus' life, Thomas directed. God could have openly demonstrated to everyone that Jesus was the promised Messiah if he had wanted to. Instead, some of the major events in his life appeared as though they didn't fit with Old Testament prophecy. Without knowing that God's Holy Spirit had overshadowed Mary, the general impression was that Jesus was born of fornication. Without knowing that Joseph and Mary had made a special trip to Bethlehem where Jesus was born, it seemed to the leaders of Israel that Jesus had come from Galilee. These facts and more were hidden from people who didn't care to probe deeply, and therefore they didn't recognize their Messiah. God wants us to ask, seek, and knock, and if we do, he promises that we will find his truth in his word. Sounds like a lot of work, Peter replied unenthusiastically. Thomas shrugged. Well, a parable is like the shell on a nut. The morsel inside stays fresh for those who can diligently crack it open, but anyone who isn't willing to put in the effort can't get at the meat. Revelation is the last book of the Bible for a good reason, and it's not easily discernible to everyone. In fact, the book clearly states for whom it's written. Can I show you? He begged. Peter stopped loosening the soil. He looked at the page Thomas had opened to. It was the first chapter of Revelation. Thomas read the opening verse. The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servants things which must shortly take place. And he sent and signified it by his angel to his servant John. See, Thomas pointed out, the vision is given to people who are already Jesus' servants. They've already come to know and understand enough from the Bible to be Jesus' servants. The conversation would likely have continued much longer if Peter hadn't glanced down at his watch and realized the afternoon was nearly over. It was time for him to leave the Hendersons. He needed a shower and change into clean clothes before heading over to the Purple Horizon. Peter quickly finished working up the soil, and then he excused himself. "I hope you enjoy yourself tonight," Thomas called out, "and may God be with you." The last comment from Thomas made Peter frown. Why would Thomas call out something like that, when for all he knows, I don't even want God in my life? "See you tomorrow," Peter replied.